This is Radio Equal Shot with your host, Alex Smith.
Nobody does the dirty world burning coal like Australia. It's time to go down under. The climate threat to our financial markets and civilization, perhaps, is no longer a subject just for radical greens. There are ripples of concern right at the core of the largest trading systems, echoed by some of the world's biggest financial institutions. Some say the carbon bubble could bring on the next crash. In January 2012, a well-regarded list of power players wrote the British governor of the Bank of England warning the London Exchange was at the top of a fossil fuel bubble that could break. Lord Stern and a team of analysts have released a new policy paper that explains that risk. From Australia, I've reached John Connor. He is the CEO of the Climate Institute in Sydney. John, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you.
Well, before we go into the details, some of them shocking details, I think, from this new report, what is the overall concern being raised?
It's a bit like the subprime, where investments, mortgages and people's investments continued on the basic assumption that house prices would continue to rise forever and ever. What this sort of research is doing is saying a lot of investments are going into fossil fuels on the assumption that we'll just keep building this and we can keep investing it, and that countries like China will keep using coal, keep using gas. And so what people are doing that in, they are either doing that in denial or indifference to the climate risk, or we think as well, increasingly, that they're doing this to try and get this up quicker before the real costs of climate change start to factor into investment decisions and before we see a flip perhaps socially, politically, or even technologically, which will leave a lot of investments in fossil fuel assets stranded.
Well, Australia, of course, is a big player in this, being the world's largest exporter of climate-damaging coal, and Australian mining companies have recently announced even more grandiose projects to mine and ship still more. We did talk to Greenpeace campaigner Georgina Woods about that a few months ago, but could you refresh our memories? What are the coal companies planning on doing in Australia?
Well, look, we obviously, yes, we have been one of the biggest or the second biggest coal exporter globally for many years. And what the research that we've just done, which is built off some of that research that you were referring to earlier, which found that basically if the world does get serious around 2 degrees, and then there's only a certain amount of greenhouse gases or carbon pollutants that can go into the atmosphere. And so we have a carbon budget. And if you apply that carbon budget globally to fossil fuel reserves, the research that the Grantham Institute and the Carbon Tracker found was that only 20 to 40% of assets, of fossil fuel assets, can be used. And so there's got a lot of wasted money there. What we've done is apply that to Australia, where Australia currently has 11% of the global market share. If you apply that to a carbon budget for coal, the reserves that we've already got listed for more than 90% certainty are more than double the carbon budget. And yet we've got another 100 gigatons or so of carbon pollution ready to go in broader resources and reserves identified by coal companies. So we reckon that those investments rest on a huge speculative bubble of climate indifference, denial, or dreaming.
And it may not keep on going that way, but it's hard to believe we would actually leave some coal in the ground. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's the thing that's very hard for many in the fossil fuel industry to get their head around. But I think we are seeing investors and pension and superannuation funds starting to look at these things, and particularly those sorts of funds that, like pension funds, who are what we call universal owners, in that they actually invest across all the asset classes across the economy. And of course, they're starting to realise, they're starting to see now, factoring onto those portfolios, the impacts of climate change are already starting to creep on to their books and raising questions then about what goes on. The old thing that many of us have spoken about for some while, that the costs of inaction are going to be much, much more than the costs of action, is actually now starting to get discussed quite seriously at very senior financial and investor levels. And many of these guys actually have a stake in the fossil fuel industry themselves. And so getting them much more active is a central part of the work that we at the Climate Institute have been doing through a range of exercises, so like the Asset Owners Disclosure Project. But this is one exercise which is highlighting this for Australian investments in coal, and also trying to get people to get their head around this concept of a carbon budget much more, because it's not just annual emissions, it's not just emissions in 2020 that's critical. It's actually, if we're serious about climate change, we've got to actually think about the stock of the greenhouse gases that are up there in the atmosphere that are driving the problem.
Well, you know, I can think of a couple of parallel examples in North America, even beyond the tar sands, of course, but the gas industry is frantically drilling more and more fracking wells, even though the price is lower than production costs. I assume it's kind of a scam to generate more investment money. And I'm wondering, is the same thing happening with Australian coal? Are they trying to beef up what they claim as reserves in order to get these pension funds and others to invest in them?
No, I think there's enough of the stuff around here in Australia, unfortunately, that they don't have to blow up what they've got and got access to. There's actually more than enough, unfortunately, here. A bit like the Cornell cliche, the Stone Age didn't end because we ran out of stones. But we're still certainly trying to sell these stones that are going to sink our planet's climate pretty vigorously down here in Australia. And there is a bunch of companies who are completely indifferent to the consequences, but we also know that there are some companies that do take this seriously and been starting to measure this. And we know some senior companies have actually, even after we've released this, have said, well, we got slightly different to the carbon content of what we have on our, that we're counting. And so to me, that highlights that some of the big company, coal companies, know that this is an issue and are either trying to race the stuff out of the ground or thinking seriously about trying to move on.
So this new report came from the Grantham Institute at the London School of Economics and from carbontracker.org. I'm wondering, what is the official name of the report? Who is really behind it? And were you a part of it?
So there's two reports that have just come out. So the Carbon Tracker with the Grantham Institute there at London School of Economics have done a reassessment of some work a couple of years ago as the Carbon Tracker did in terms of global carbon budget and the fossil fuel reserves that are on the asset books worldwide. And what we've done is done a report with Carbon Tracker on Australia's unburnable carbon, the carbon bubble that we have here when you apply that to our reserves here. So there's two reports, Alex, that's come out in pretty quick succession about these things. And so and I think that it actually reveals quite an interest in amongst a range of players. We've seen Citigroup, we've seen HSBC, we know World Bank and IMF and International Energy Agency are looking at these sorts of things. And so this is taken to the very top of the boardrooms, it's taken to the very top of the investment chain, some better literacy about these things. And we think that they're pretty important targets, particularly, well, around the world and in Canada and the US and here in Australia, the political processes aren't that flash. So we are keen to engage with those, but keen also to engage in alternative avenues like big capital, who could actually ironically be our big friend in this climate crisis.
This is Radio EcoShock with John Connor. John, I was surprised to hear those voices agreeing with the assessment of what we might call a second Stern report out of the UK for that part of it. Big financial institutions like Citibank, HSBC, they publicly admit we face a hidden risk with overinvestment in what could be a dead-end economy if we're going to go with fossil fuels. Why are they coming on board now, even though they are, as you say, probably heavily invested in these same companies?
They're identifying the risks. They're not all sort of necessary fellow travellers by any stretch of the imagination. The Citigroup analysis here in Australia basically said, well, you know, they took a kind of a fund manager approach, which says, well, look, an appropriate response to the risk might be to dig, baby, dig, to get the stuff out of the ground quick, smart, and onto the marketplace before other players do, or other countries. It's more that they're identifying the risks. It's up, ultimately, to the trustees of the superannuation, the pension funds, some of the central banks and the like to actually start to drive some of the action here. So just that they're identifying the risk is important. We're having that discussion. But there are some quite scary consequences that on one level it might actually drive people to rush the stuff out of the ground even quicker, knowing that the gate's going to shut on them in some way, whether it's because capital will realise that the climate costs are going to be much more consequences, or technologies which develop quicker, which are going to provide solutions not just to climate but to things like air pollution in China, will come on and leave them stranded with heavy and complexly financed investments in very big infrastructure-rich things like coal mines and coal export facilities.
Wow, a rush to pollute just for the greed of it. I hadn't considered that, but I'm trying to picture the average worker who's paying into a pension fund now. They've got to think about, well, what is my world going to be like 30 years from now when I actually try and collect this pension? Shouldn't they be saying to their managers, look, we don't want to invest in a wrecked climate?
Absolutely, and I think this is one of the great new areas of engagement, which is very important. And so we've been working through, as I said, the Asset Owners Disclosure Project, that's AODproject.net, to actually be surveying pension funds and demand greater transparency from pension funds and superannuation funds about the emissions content, about their hedging of their investments in terms of low carbon investments. But we've been doing some work. There's an RUTheVitalFew.org, a way in which people can get connected with their pension funds and superannuation funds and have a direct conversation, because it actually turns out that there are direct fiduciary duty there between trustees and the workers and who have got their capital invested with them, being invested on their behalf by the trustees, to respond to some engagement there. So I encourage people to have a look at that. And of course, we've got movements now like 350.org, their divestment campaign that they're taking on the uni campuses here. So I think this is a big, and we've only just scratched the surface of the engagement with the superannuation, what we call it down here, superannuation funds, the pension funds in the US and Canada and around the world. Just scratching the surface of engagement with that. It's a very important area there about people, workers demanding that their capital be put to good use, because frankly, we all to some level have been accidental investors in a very unsustainable global economy. We get active with how our money is being invested. We can change the ballgame.
John, in the Guardian newspaper, April 28th, journalist Damian Carrington concluded from the report that he'd read that Australia's coal industry is, quote, ripe for financial implosion. Do you agree with that, and how could that be?
Well, he's going off our report that Australian coal is well above its share of the carbon budget for coal. Now, we were asked in releasing that report, you know, when will this bubble burst? The answer is, we don't know, but the pressure's going to keep building. Here in Australia, when we raise this, some of the industry analysts say, look, for China, it's a choice between development and the climate. The development will win every time. But they ignore the amount of investment in clean energy in China. They're ignoring policy things like coal production caps, and they're ignoring the interest that China has in dealing with air pollution issues, which are driven very much, in particular by coal, in some of their big cities and their coal power stations. And so there's a high risk there. We don't know exactly when that bubble will burst and how that implosion will play out. But Australian coal investments and the Australian economy, because it's such a big part of our exports, are at risk.
I wonder, yes, is the government, which is actually helping this industry of building extra railroads and clearing the way for extra projects and cheerleading it, is that government addicted to the extra jobs and the extra taxes that they hope is going to come out of this coal boom?
Well, this is, the Australian economy is heavily addicted to carbon pollution, a bit like Canada's and some others, particularly Australia and Canada, I think. But and there are certainly so many states. You know, the Premier of Queensland, one of our states, said, yeah, we're coal country up here, and certainly been a big booster for the industry. And, you know, you can see why. And there's actually many workers and the like that are involved. At an employment level, it's not a bigger a part of Australian employment. It's only about 4 or 5% of the whole mining industry of our employment. But yet there is still a lot of money that sloshes through the system, and that is very powerful in the political economy, of course, as well.
Of course, the pessimists are going to say we aren't going to change a thing. We may be unable to alter course, and we'll just burn all the oil and coal we can find. Why do you and the other report writers predict that we will change away from fossil fuels sooner or later?
Well, I just think the pressure is going to build, and we have a range of factors. I mean, there are reasons to be pessimistic, but there are reasons to be optimistic, and I sort of call myself a professional optimist, but that's our job, is to keep finding those ways forward. And we don't know exactly the dimensions of how this shift might happen. No one knew exactly when the subprime bubble would burst, when people finally woke up to the shonky investments and the like that were then involved, and the risks that were involved. But I think we are seeing the awakening of the costs that's involved right now, and that's being at the top of the investment chain. And we have a remarkable situation where the new heads of the IMF and the World Bank have become quite ardent in their engagement on these issues and are taking this at the very highest economic levels. To quote Donald Rumsfeld, there's some known knowns and some known unknowns and some unknown unknowns about how this might happen. We have some breakthroughs in technology. We have a key agreement between the US and China. We have, as I say, global capital all of a sudden moving quickly across in this way. We have dramatically ratcheted up social engagement, because I think the social license of many of these companies, if not already evaporated, is evaporating, putting pressure on the actual operation of companies and pension funds and superannuation funds. These things could crystallise in ways in which we don't know. And so our strong advice to business and investors is disclose on this, share the risks, hedge against the risks, and you can do that by some stronger investments in low carbon and solutions, or you can go the whole hog like 350.org is saying and divest completely out of fossil fuels. But you can certainly, at the very least, invest more significantly in low carbon solutions. There's some $60 trillion globally in these pension funds and superannuation funds, and Deutsche Bank say we've probably got about 2% of that in low carbon solutions. If we ratchet that up even to about 5% on some rough estimations, then that's going to throw probably half the extra capital that we need for the climate solutions into the fray. So we're not talking about a complete redirection of super funds and the like as being necessary, but some pretty clever hedging strategies can get us a long way to some of the solutions that we so urgently need.
Well, John Connor, I think your call about a possible financial implosion in Australia could be unpopular there, especially since the media is owned by a couple of billionaires almost wedded to the mining industry. Are you getting criticized?
Well, look, it's a pretty torrid public space here in Australia at the moment. We haven't been criticized, and as I said, I've actually was very interested. One of the big companies actually has come to us and said, well, hang on, it's slightly different figures to us. So it's actually a quiet realization that this is an issue. When these sorts of things come up, there are certainly the big miners and some of those lobbyists who just scoff at this, at China, or somehow scoff at the suggestion that China will not go forward. We've had a very fishbowl debate here around the carbon laws and carbon prices and the emissions trading systems that we've put in place, which is up for grabs at the election at the end of this year. So it's a very insular debate here, but some people are slowly looking beyond our horizon to some of these issues. That's important. We hope to continue to encourage that.
Is there anything you would like to add?
I mean, I guess the other thing to say, what our research also discovered is that, in fact, more of Australia's coal is owned by overseas investors than actual domestic listed companies. And so that actually adds an element of risk here, because should investors who are based elsewhere realise these risks, should regulators elsewhere force them to realise that in a more public way, that heightens the risk as well. So it's quite interesting not to just look at what's happening only on the stock exchanges of the particular country, that in this web of global capital that we actually live in, these risks are increased by the way in which global capital can move very quickly around the place, and that hasn't worked for the climate or the planet in many ways in the past, but ironically it could be one of our saviours.
Yes, TransCanada Pipeline is actually owned by 16 Chinese corporations, and a huge patch of our tar sands have also been purchased by the Chinese, and we don't know what they will do. And as you say, in a global market, money can just walk away if it needs to. We've been talking with John Connor. He heads up the Climate Institute in Sydney, Australia. Find out more at www.climateinstitute.org.au, and look for a link to the new report in my own show blog at ecoshock.info. John, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.